The Secrets of Technology is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hi, I'm Dom Bettinelli, and you're listening to The Secrets of Technology, where we discuss the technology news that's important to you from a uniquely Catholic point of view. And joining me today on the panel are Victor Lambs. Hey, Victor.
Hi, Dom.
And Father Joseph Sund. Hey, Father.
Good to be with you again.
Folks, I want to tell you about another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy called The Secrets of Sacred Art. You can find that wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/art. And it's a video show as well as being an audio podcast. And video is great because they can actually show you the art they're discussing. And they did a recent episode where they talked about art in a pub. A British pub that was previously a chapel. And when they were renovating it, they took down the wall and found a Last Supper painting from the Middle Ages behind it. It's a fascinating story. You should check that out.
Yeah, they did a recent episode on St. Anne's Church in Detroit, which is near and dear to me, both physically and spiritually as well. So check that one out, too.
Awesome. Awesome. So before we get into our main topic, we do have some feedback we wanted to share. This was a listener who sent in a problem, but then sent in a solution, which is the best kind of feedback there is. Henry sent in an email. He said, I use an Android app called Podcast Addict, premium paid upgrade, if it matters, to download and listen to several SQPN podcasts, as well as numerous others. I frequently get a message stating the server hosting the podcast returned SSL handshake exception. Handshake failed when attempting to download or play live a podcast. Eventually, after multiple attempts over several days at different times, I will have success. I do not have this problem with other podcasts. And I told them I'd look into it. And I suggested that the folks at Podcast Addict might have some way to point us to a solution. Maybe what something was going wrong at our end at SQPN. But then he followed up with a later email. He said, I did more sleuthing. And I think it has to do with my vintage LG V20 phone running Android 7. There seems to be a certificate problem for devices running lower than 7.1.1. And there was a whole thing. It's really complicated. I don't want to get too much into it. But a few years ago, the agencies that sign the certificates that authenticate the security certificates that says this is who this person, this server is who they say they are, stopped support of an older implementation that support that Android 7 depended on as of February. So if you're experiencing anything like this and you have an old phone, that could be it. So
what was end of life for Android 7? Because I know it was released in 2016. I think the last version might have been nearing 2020.
Probably. Yeah, it's been a while. I think that's one of the reasons why they're not like they were going to cut it off in, I think it was 2020. And then they came to an agreement to extend it a few more years, but that only went to 2024. So, it would be a nice thing if old technology just kept working forever. And, the hardware these days can often just keep running and running and running. It's the software and the integrations between different things where that really breaks down.
Yeah, something like a podcast app is pretty harmless when it comes to security. But if I'm running my email or my calendar or my banking apps, right, on an Android 7 phone, probably shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
Well, I was just going to say I'm a big Android guy, but I have to put in a plug for Apple products here because I recently got an iPad and I haven't had an iPad in about 13 or 14 years. And apparently I had done some projects on that my old iPad 13 or 14 years ago in GarageBand and uploaded them to iCloud. Brand new iPad. I went to iCloud, loaded one of those projects and all the instruments, music projects, all the instruments, all the files, everything was right there. Like I had just put it down yesterday. So there's a plug for Apple and their GarageBand and keeping their stuff from going obsolete, at least on the software end.
Come join us in the walled garden. It's really nice in here.
Yeah, I'm I just might someday.
And that brings up the whole lawsuit, the Justice Department lawsuit.
No,
we're not really going to cover that here because there's about 10 years of you know, lawyers doing stuff ahead of that. And it's just, I don't find that interesting. This show is really about helping people use their tech in their daily life. And that really, you know, until some settlement comes along, that's not really going to affect you. And if it even ever does. So speaking of helping people use their tech in their everyday life, today's main topic, we're going to be talking about home networking, and we're going to approach it from the beginner's perspective, you know, from the start, from the bottom. These days, most homes have some type of networking in it. Most people that I know have a modem and Wi-Fi probably, or something along those lines in their house. But, you know, it's worthwhile to kind of step back and consider the whole thing from the basics. And, you know, the first question to really address it is what constitutes home networking? When you guys think of home networking, what do you think of?
What it sounds like, right? Things in my home. But personal computers, your televisions, your cell phones, your iPads, probably you have a printer, but you're not going to have a high-end server or anything else in there. So you can do things in such a way that you're not going to have a large amount of bandwidth.
Yeah, I agree with Father Sund. It definitely things that you would need for your home to talk to things within your home, like PCs and printers, or other computers, media servers, I think would be not a high-end server, but you know, maybe something like a Plex media server definitely would be in there. And then all your wireless devices, which now include, you know, gaming consoles like a Nintendo Switch or a Steam Deck, things that you can wire in, if you have the option of wiring in some of your devices to Ethernet, like your PlayStations or your, file servers, that sort of thing. So for me, home networking incorporates a wide array of technologies, everything from, you know, wireless to wired. I was big on wireless networking for a really long time, but really missed, the stability and the speed that you get with wired networking. So that prompted, quite a bit of running Ethernet cables, you know, through my basement and up through the walls and stuff. But it's a fun project, and the results are definitely worth it, in my opinion.
And you hit on an important point of the wired versus wireless.
Testing.
If I'm doing things that require a large amount of bandwidth, perhaps that I'm gaming or anything like that, I'm going to need that wired connection. Some of the lower demanding things, I'm just checking my email, I'm scrolling through Facebook, even some of the video streaming services on your TV, right? Those wireless is okay, but there's a limit of the speed of wireless that wired can do better. Wired is always better than wireless when it comes to speed and bandwidth.
Right. Yeah. And stability too. For my work laptop, I have that, you know, wired in via Ethernet, and certainly so if I'm on a call or something, I don't want, you know, packets of my video conferencing going off into the ether and not going to the server at work. So I just found it's a lot more stable for, you know, video conferencing and stuff like that as well.
Even internally, it's like, you know, I have a network attached storage, you know, when I'm moving big files, you know, video files, mm-hmm. and audio files back and forth, that works much better if I'm on a wired connection between my computer and the NAS. You know, they, you know, it's so much faster because Wi-Fi, even like up to Wi-Fi 6, it still tops out like it, 300, 450 megabits per second, which is, you know, a lot lower than, you know, most regular home networking is, you know, wired Ethernet is 1 gigabit per second. So, the most basic wired is going to be faster than the fastest home Wi-Fi these days. So the other thing to keep in mind, too, is, you know, what kind of Internet service plan do I want? Do I want to, you know, how much bandwidth do I need? How much speed do I need? And that really, you know, you have to think about what kind of devices do I have? How many people in my family? How many devices do we have? And not just phones, computers, and tablets, but like Father mentions, your TV, your, you know, your set-top box, the Internet of Things stuff all over, you know, think about all the things you have. And you, you know, while I may not be able to use a whole, you know, gigabit of internet access speed, you know, 1 megabit per second, you know, internet speed with just my one device, you divide it up over a bunch of devices and then it becomes, oh, okay, yeah, that becomes worthwhile at that. So it's, you have to think about some of those questions of how much stuff do I need in order to avoid clogging up the pipes?
Yep. And another thing with wired versus wireless, I mean, if you're living in a house that's separated and you have a large amount of separation, that's good. But the moment you have tons of Wi-Fi routers in a similar area, you start getting congestion of channels. So if you think of like different roadways, things are going on. If you have 5-6 networks running next to each other, you're going to start to get some competition in the air. And so especially if you're in an apartment complex or close quarters in a urban area, wired is going to be better for most of your things to keep away from some of that.
Right. That could be an issue. Victor, you said you know someone who had some experience using the 5G internet?
Yeah, so my main experience with broadband and home networking has been through cable modems, you know, pretty exclusively. And I've always, you know, as the technology has gotten faster, I've, you know, gotten speedier modems and service, and I've never had an issue. It seems the limiting factor for me has always been, you know, the server on the other side, you know, when downloading something, you know, just being rate limited or something there on their end. But my mom recently tried a 5G internet router, which is, you know, no cables coming into your house. It uses 5G cell signals to provide broadband internet. And she only kept it for, you know, maybe a week or two because it was comparatively slow and spotty, especially with the large amount of video streaming they were doing. They had to put it near a window and they're in an area that doesn't get great cell coverage anyways. So it wasn't a good product for them and their situation. But if anybody has 5G internet and loves it, you can let us know in the comments, certainly.
Yeah, that one really depends on the coverage of the cell towers where you live. I mean, that's like, I've never had really good coverage, you know, for cell at my house. What, all the networks, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm in kind of a dead zone, I guess. It's not terrible. I can make a call, but I wouldn't want to depend on it as my only internet access. When the power goes out and I'm trying to, you know, get online and check the power company and that sort of stuff, I really notice, like, okay, I need to go stand over in this corner of the house and hold my phone up toward the corner of the wall, you know, to get a signal. That it sounds like a good idea and it's a great backup, but you know, the one of the other ones that is a wire coming into your house is still a better, more reliable thing these days.
I don't know what this 5G stuff is that you speak of. It does not exist around me.
It's all going into your brain and, yeah. So let's talk about the components of a home network. We won't get into the specifics just yet. I just want to talk about it at the highest level. There's just a handful of different pieces of hardware that you would typically have on a home network. You have the modem, and that usually comes from your internet provider, although it's possible to buy your own. We'll talk about that in a second. Then you have a router, which is sometimes built into the modem. So it's a combination thing, but oftentimes isn't. And the router takes the traffic from your coming in the house over the modem and retransmits it internally among a internal network among your devices and routes the traffic to the correct place, the correct device. Then there are things called switches, and those are wired hubs, in a sense. I shouldn't use hub. That's a specific networking thing. They're devices that where you plug in wires into it on one end, and they go on the other end to the, you know, and it connects all of your devices in a wired way. And most routers have at least a couple ports on them as well for wired connections. But if you have more than a couple things, you'll want a lot more. We'll talk about that. And then you have switches, access points. And these are devices which extend the network. They can be like, you can think of them like a bridge of the network where, you know, your router comes in to your house, sits in your house and where the internet comes in at one end. And you'll have to, but the power of the radios in it can't reach all the way to the other end of the house. So you could put an access point, you know, midway across the house, and it could extend the reach of the Wi-Fi signal further along. So that's kind of the in a gist, in a nutshell, what those are. So let's talk about the different pieces of hardware, starting with the modem. There are different types of modems. You'll have different types of internet access. What kind of access do you guys have right now?
I have cable with a modem that I bought from Amazon, okay. An Aeris surfboard modem.
How about you, Father?
Depends on where I am. I have everywhere from some of my parishes still have DSL. And where I'm sitting right now, I have a throttled fiber connection. If I'm blessed enough to be at the school, I have the full throttle on the fiber connection. So,
yeah, I'm on a fiber right now myself. You've had fiber for, you know, a decade now. I think I moved over from just coax cable, and it's been faster than cable was at the time. I don't know if there's much of a difference these days, but it was appreciably faster back when I switched over. And so DSL is tends to be a little slower. It's a bit of an older technology, although they've been catching up as well. You'll often find DSL in more remote places where they haven't brought in the newer tech. I think it's really
usually on my DSL where I am, I'm pulling about 6 megabits a second. And then the like my throttled fiber is 30. Right. And then my full fiber is a gig.
Right. So that's a huge difference. Just 6 and 1,000, you know, that's so you can see the difference. Victor, you mentioned that you own your own modem.
Yeah. So about 10 years ago, I bought my first cable modem because I was tired of, you know, getting charged $5 or $10 per month by the cable company to lease their modem. So I bought an Aeris surfboard. And over the times, I've upgraded it, not because it's broken, but because as I've gotten faster internet, I've needed, you know, more capable modems that have additional channels and stuff. And now you can get like a, you know, 1 gigabit speed modem, which is, you know, pretty fast for cable. And it's like $130 or so. So it'll pay for itself if they're still charging $10 a month and check your bill. You know, it'll pay for itself in around a year, and you'll have it for, you know, 3 or 4 years.
And Victor, you bring up an important fact on the modems of cable companies are really good at calling you to upsell you on speed. And my dad a while back, they upsold him to go from like 150 megabit to a 300 package. But his modem didn't have the right version of, I think it's DOCSIS, right?
Yeah.
And so I came over to their house and I'm like, Dad, you're paying for 300 and you're not getting it. You're capping off at 150 right now, right? They had upsold him on all the packages, but his hardware didn't support it, right? And so that's a word to the wise. Sometimes the cable companies won't care about getting you the latest hardware. They just want to get the extra penny out of you.
And there's no disadvantage really to having your own modem. You know, it's plug and play, and sometimes you just need to call them and say, send a signal to my modem, and they do it.
Right.
And then you're good until you upgrade your internet service in 4 or 5 years to something faster.
Yeah. And, you know, just to make sure it's compatible, you could, you know, Google your your internet provider and modem and, you know, or, you know, fiber modem or whatever, Google, Verizon fiber modem, that sort of thing. And that's what you were mentioning, Victor, is having to call them is, this, you know, it's called provisioning, where they have to verify that whatever this device is that's asking to, you know, transmit internet, you know, traffic on the internet, is recognized by them. It's not just somebody climbed up a pole and plugged something into the box on the, on the pole, you know? So they, it's a formality, and they'll, and other people do this. This is a thing, there's nothing nefarious about it. And it's a way to save money for sure. And sometimes even get better. Some of these modems, a lot of these modems are better than the ones that are mass produced for the internet providers.
Yeah, and a lot of the modems too come with a router or even an access point built in, which I think brings us to our next topic.
Yes, and really, there's two main kinds of routers that you want to think about. There's the standard router and a mesh router. And a standard router is, it sort of stands alone. It's just one access point, has an antenna. Nowadays, usually a bunch of antennas on it, and it sits in one place and blankets the area in radio signals. Whereas a mesh router has a base station that attaches to your modem, and then you'll put other devices, sometimes, you know, similar looking, sometimes smaller, whatever, that are from the same company, around your home, and they connect to each other and they sort of piggyback the signal to each other. And so they blanket your a wider area in the signals. They tend to be mesh routers tend to be more expensive. That's just makes sense. There's more technology there, more stuff going on there. The routers, they tend to be, you know, they have different Wi-Fi standards. And these days you probably want to be looking at anything that says Wi-Fi 6 or 6E, but at least Wi-Fi 6. Some of them will start to push Wi-Fi 7 on you, but it's too early for Wi-Fi 7. I mean, Wi-Fi 7 will eventually be a good standard, but it's early. It hasn't reached its full potential yet. You got to spend a lot of money on it before it's worth the spending that money. I mean, if you have money to burn, sure, but most of us don't. And so you probably want to get a Wi-Fi 6 or 6E router at this point.
And something else to consider too is, as I was using, you know, Wi-Fi routers, which have the router and the access point built into the same device, and I determined that was kind of a bottleneck for my internet. The router was really working overtime trying to process all the packets of network information and act as the Wi-Fi access point. So I actually, you know, spent $100 and got a Ubiquiti Edge router, which is just a wired router. Mm-hmm. And I use that as my router. And then my wireless router, I didn't get rid of it. I just put it into access point mode. And now it happily does all the Wi-Fi in the house as part of a mesh. And when it ever gets a packet that needs to go someplace, it sends it to the router. And the router, all the router has to do is just route packets. So it was a little extra setup. I really wouldn't recommend it for everyone. But if you're spending more money for faster internet and you're not getting it, look at the CPU usage, if you can, on your router's dashboard. And, that could be a source. You may just need a beefier router as well.
Yep. You're flirting on the edge of going from home networking to small business networking there.
Well, we have a small business as well, so.
So some names to think about when you're looking at routers. I have an Eero, which I've had for a number of years. I like it. The setup is done through an app on your phone. It's in the cloud. That's nice, except when the internet is out, then it's hard to do anything with it. But then again, the internet is out. Some routers still, they do like a local, they act like a local web server, and you enter a special address in your web browser, 192.168.0.1 or whatever, and you access a special web page on your router to do the configuration. So I use Eero. Another well-known name for mesh is Ubiquiti. Eero is interesting in that what they basically sell is like this, these little pucks, they're little squared things, and they're exactly the same. And they sell you in a certain number of them, 3 or 6 or whatever. And then you place them around your home and they're all the same. They're all sort of interchangeable. Ubiquiti is interesting in that they have a lot of different devices. They sort of, the Eero is the only thing you need in this sense. They're trying to make it as simple as possible. Whereas Ubiquiti gives you lots of choices, lots of different things. They have, an access point that goes outdoors and an access point you can put in a stadium and they have different kinds of routers. And so, and they tend to be mesh, routers tend to be more expensive, as I mentioned, but, something to think about.
A lot of my parishes, we run Ubiquiti products for the Wi-Fi and the networking, where some of it's in the business range things, but they have what's Ubiquiti nano stations and things like that that are really, it's really flexible and good coverage. Once I start getting towards the threshold of school stuff, Ubiquiti doesn't work for me. And so I have to start going with higher end products on that. Right. So, but for the parish where I'm probably having a maximum of 20 devices or so, we're pretty good there.
Yeah.
And of course I like my TP-Link products. My current mesh wireless is the TP-Link Deco that I got about 4 or 5 years ago. Got a set of 3, wireless routers that put around the house. They're a little bit bigger than the Eero's physically, which is good for me. It means they have a bigger antenna inside of it. And it's the first wireless router I've had that's lasted more than 2 years. For whatever reason, all my wireless routers would die when they hit the 1 or 2 year mark. But these are still going strong after 4 or 5 years. Huh. So I do like my TP-Link Decos. They drop the price on them all the time, too. So
now, one that I often hear about, but I don't have any experience with, is Synology. They're known for making the network attached storage, but they also have routers, which is interesting. And they have they have a mesh router, with the MR2200 AC, and they also have non-mesh routers as well. One of the advantages of that is, Synology is well known for being the sort of thing you can tinker with. And if you have a Synology NAS, the interface for the router is very similar, so you'll feel very comfortable and at home with it. So that's something in its favor. It's more of a tinkerer's router, I think.
Yeah,
in that sense.
One thing I'd add to the Eero's is if you have a lot of Amazon Echo products, the newer Echoes will interface in with the Eero to be a mesh extender onto your Eero network, which works really well.
That's right. That's right. And the Eero's will help. They're part of the Amazon thing where they will help set up other devices, other Amazon devices like Kindles and Echoes and that sort of thing. As you add them to you, they're making, they work together to get things set up, which is, kind of interesting. And then TP-Link Archer is another non-mesh router that is well-regarded, well-reviewed people. And you can get a decent, say, TP-Link Archer router for, $130, less even sometimes. It is not at all expensive. And, I mentioned before, Wi-Fi 6, Wi-Fi 7. You do want to keep up with these techs. You don't have to upgrade every year like you do your phone. But when you do upgrade your phone, they almost, and your computer and your, tablet, they often have these better networking speeds, but you're not getting an advantage of it if you have a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old router in your house. If you have an old router, take a look at it and seriously consider it. Is it time to upgrade it? It's one of those things that you want to, the phone and the computer are the flashy things, but something like that's infrastructure, like a router, that really needs to be looked at too. And the modem, if you've had that modem from your phone company, your internet company for a long time, maybe you should check with them. Do I need a new modem or should I buy a new modem? So this was something worth thinking about.
I'll give a tale of doom here. I moved into a parish and the entire office, they had all upgraded their computers. They kept upgrading hardware because they thought everything was so slow. And I went downstairs and looked at the switch that was putting out the internet. And they were running an old 10-100 switch, which means it's between 10 and 100 megabit. The current switches are gigabit, which is 10 times the speed internally. And so even when they were trying to print something, it was taking a really long time. And so they spent large amounts of money trying to get things to get faster, when all it was we needed to drop a few $100 and put in a good switch.
Right. Yeah. And switches are not expensive. You know, I mean, you probably had to get a 16 or 32 port switch for that. And that's a couple $100.
48.
Yeah, 48.
With power over Ethernet, yeah, and all of that. So
I have a, I think that's a 32 here, but that's me. But, you know, most people, you can get away with a 4 or 8 port switch, and those are readily available, you know, really cheap off of Amazon, you know, $30-$40, you know, but you do want to make sure you're looking for that gigabit speed, decent cables. You know, you want to make sure you're getting the cable itself can degrade your speed. So that's another area we really haven't talked much about, is the cabling. You want to make sure you're getting decent Cat5 or Cat6 cabling
I wouldn't even mess around with Cat5 right now. It has to be Cat5e, but if you're buying it, I would go Cat6.
Right. And when you're putting cable out, you know, don't run it next to power lines. Don't run it, on top of the, don't bring your Ethernet cable across your power strip. You know, those things can cause interference and that sort of stuff. So you want to think about how these things are laid out and be, you know, the neatness sometimes does count, actually. Let's see, what else was there? I think that about covers it. You know, one of the things we didn't talk about was about securing your home network. And that's a very important topic. That is very important. Passwords and encryption and that sort of thing, which we did talk about previously in episode 119. So if you want to go back and listen to that, all of that's still relevant. It's at starquest.fm/TEC119. That'll take you to it. Or look for episode 119 in the podcast directory. And, a couple things. Use strong passwords on your routers. Enable encryption. I'm not even sure you could set up a router these days without encryption. I'm not sure they would even let you.
You can.
Oh.
You can.
Yeah. I don't think they should let you. I mean, like professional ones, sure. You should. but consumer ones shouldn't even let you set up unencrypted.
If your network password is your home phone number, change it.
Yeah.
If it is your dog's name that you're yelling outside constantly, change it. And those are two really common ones I've seen.
That came with the device, if it's the password that came with the device, also change it, especially if it's one of more of those, like, you know, small business type things where the password, you know, it has the same default password for every device. They don't give you the cute little password printed on the bottom. Right. But even the password printed on the bottom, change that, because if somebody gets in your house and
admin.
Right. And one of the things that you can do is the network ID or the network name.
Yep.
I don't use my name. Mine doesn't say Bettinelli on it. I don't want people to know which one is my network. That's the one to target. I want his stuff. You know, no, I use, something else. A popular one is, FBI surveillance van. I see a lot of people use that.
We have one of those in our neighborhood now, and I don't know who it is.
Everybody thinks they're the original comedian. You're not.
Yeah. Hopefully I'm not gouting myself, but I just changed mine to Isidore or some variation of that, who's the patron saint of networking and patron saint of the internet.
Yeah.
And since I've done that, I've had fewer internet outages. So take
that. There you go.
So yeah, that's a good naming of Wi-Fi networks. Is a really fun
yes. It's like naming hard drives back in the day, you know.
Yeah.
All right. So that's, I think that should cover pretty much most of what we were saying. Yeah. There are advanced topics we might want to cover in the future, like smart home devices and Internet of Things, that sort of stuff, troubleshooting and that sort of stuff. We can revisit the topic again in the future and cover some of that. But if anyone has any questions about stuff we've covered so far, we would love to get those, and we'll try to answer them in a future episode. You can email us at technology@sqpn.com. Before we move on, let's see, I want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secrets of Technology, including John N., Tony L., Joe E., Stephen Y., and Timothy J. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secrets of Technology and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And since April 15th is almost here, I will remind you that StarQuest is a 501c3 nonprofit, so your gifts are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Consult your tax professional. So let's talk about some headlines. The first one is about this very interesting fellow. The headline says, first human to receive Neuralink implant says it lets him play Civilization 6.
I think this was a great story. I know, you know, if you go on Twitter and stuff, you see a lot of stuff about Neuralink, which is Elon Musk's, you know, mental brain chip company. But I think this is, you know, granted, it's talking about using it to play chess in Civilization 6, but I think, you know, you're giving someone back a part of his life that he thought he had given up. And I can't imagine how, you know, that must feel or how meaningful that would feel if you've lost the ability to do something that you enjoy, and even something as relatively benign as playing a computer game. So, I mean, granted, you know, it is a chip in his brain, but in this case, it's, you know, giving him the ability to do something he really likes.
It is fascinating that he talks about it. There's a live stream he does, and he's the first recipient in the test. And he talks about how it's like he feels like he's a Jedi because he can move the cursor with the Force, with his brain. He's telekinetic in a sense.
Some of the playing Civ 6 and everything, it's as much as I like playing Civilization, just seems to kind of miss the point of what's possible with it. So
I thought it was interesting, though, because, you know, for him, it's this little thing that he loves to play, you know, this game. And he's a quadriplegic, so he's paralyzed from the shoulders down. And I know that Civ 6, it's like he could operate a computer in the past, you know, with a mouse stick he uses to touch. But Civ 6, the controls are complex. It would take forever to complete a single turn in it using a mouse stick or whatever. Now he can you know, use the regular controls and operate it, you know, just as fast as if he had the use of his hands.
So the complexity of what he's doing really points to the hope of other complex things that you could be doing with the Neuralink that might have some real world application outside of gaming, as important as gaming is.
It's just the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine prosthetic, you know, hands and arms. That would be really, you know, where we would, you could imagine this going.
Yeah, it says he does research sessions with Neuralink. The gaming is just something he does on his own time. So you can only imagine what's going on in those research sessions. Maybe it is something like, you know, moving, you know, prosthetics or something that they haven't unveiled yet. So, yeah, very, very exciting things. Anything that increases someone's mobility and gives them, you know, an important part of their life back. I think it's wonderful.
Now, as the Neuralink things, it's currently just one way, right? That you're controlling something else. Is it able to go back and feed input back into the brain?
I don't think there's feedback, and I don't know. That would be interesting if they could. Like, if you could get a sensation force feedback in a, you know, in a gripping thing, you know, that have a two-way. Like, if you could control a prosthetic arm and get a sensation of the force of holding something, that would be interesting. I'm sure that's where they'd like to go with it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
The things I start getting a little weird about is just the fact that your my data of my brain is going into a device. And now all of a sudden, things going on in my head are able to be read by Elon Musk's company. And so there's parts of it that you're sitting going, ooh, that makes me a little queasy.
I'm on X, so Musk can already read what's going on in my head.
I mean, right now, they're not getting much information out of these. But yeah, in the future, down the road, that such a device might be able to see all kinds of things going on in your head.
Yeah, that's Hugo Strange, the Batman villain, I think, had something like that.
Right. So our next headline is from the Pillar Catholic, which is, I won't have a link for you. This was in their Starting Seven email newsletter from the beginning of March. But it's very interesting. It was the headline, Confession Unplugged. And it's about the Ukrainian Catholic eparchies of Poland. So they're the Catholic, Eastern Catholic, Ukrainian rite in Poland. And the bishops or the eparchs of the eparchies, the bishops issued some decrees basically saying priests are not allowed to bring their phone, smartwatch, tablet, any electronic device with them into the confessional. And in fact, it was part of a larger instruction, which was actually primarily about not using any devices, digital devices, as liturgical prayer books. So that, not using a tablet or a phone in place of the book with the liturgical rites in it, for instance. As well as, the priest should not be taking selfies or using, video cameras or cameras while celebrating the liturgy. What do y'all think of this? Father, what do? Do you leave all your devices outside the confessional?
Generally, I leave it outside. I generally will leave my cell phone in my sacristy. If I forget to, it usually goes in airplane mode. Whether or not airplane mode is really what it says it is, I don't know. But usually my habit is that it's set on the sacristy counter. Even when I'm celebrating mass, I like to have my cell phone on the sacristy counter in my, generally, even if it's not a smartwatch, I generally add the practice of taking watches off. Even when I'm celebrating mass, I don't like to be, knowing time and things, to the parishioners probably don't want to hear that, but
although
we're on God's time.
Sometimes I do see priests put a watch down on the embo when they start their homily so that they know they're not going on and on. But I'm sure that's not a problem for you, Father. So one of the things one of these bishops said was it wasn't primarily about the worry about spying, that being someone being able to spy on people in the confessional, but it was about the distraction, because even if the phone's on silent, if it vibrates or the watch vibrates, it takes you out of the moment. It takes you out of the moment of the prayer of the sacrament. There might be some to that.
I agree. If that happened, then when I was in confession, I would ask the priest if it was something he needed to take care of and I can come back later. It's, you want to have at least one place, and the confessional is probably one of the very few places where, you do have that intimacy, to God, and you don't want any technology or distractions going off in it if you can help it. So I would appreciate no technology. If they could build a Faraday cage into the confessional, I think that would be great.
It should be like in the intelligence community or in the military.
Oh, yeah.
They have SCIFs, the secure compartmentalized information facility, and outside they have these boxes that you put your phone in as you're going in, and it locks. I've seen all the in all the movies and TV shows, and it locks the thing in there. They should have those in church so that
or a Dave Chappelle concert.
Yeah. There's an important thing in the liturgical action, right? Especially in the celebration of the mass and celebration of sacraments, in the celebration of the sacrament of confession. I am sitting in persona Christi, in the person of Christ. And so to take that seriously and not to be sitting in the person of myself, scrolling through Facebook or checking email or checking text messages or whatever it may be, there's a very important fact of that. And the attentiveness, then just on a personal level, the attentiveness to the person sometimes pouring their heart out in a confession, that you are getting distracted from that is good for this young bishop. He's a 51-year-old bishop, I think. So, which in the greater...
He's a kid.
Greater thing of bishops, that's young.
Yep. You know, he does say, like, we're not saying that anything about lay people. Like, you know, if he using a phone helps you to pray the mass, or in their case, the divine liturgy. If you know, my father-in-law has his eyesight isn't great, so he uses his phone, or he actually brings a small iPad mini, and has a really big type, so he can follow along in the prayers. You know, we pray the divine office, my family, we pray the divine office from the iBreviary app, you know, those sorts of things. And I know many priests who do from the iBreviary app. I think those sorts of things are fine. But there are certain things, you know, one of the things, like using the liturgical books to say mass, you know, one of the things that I've heard said is, you know, an iPad, you know, 1 minute it could be watching some Netflix, R-rated Netflix movie, which is fine. There's nothing, you know, necessarily wrong with that. But in the next minute, it's celebrating the mass off of it. And it's like, you know, profane things for profane things, sacred things for sacred things. You know, it's just, that device is, you know, the things you use to celebrate the mass should be kept sacred and holy and set apart. And some people might say, what if I just had an iPad that was only for that purpose? Sure, but someday it's not going to be used for that purpose. And then what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, I know for a fact that the missal I'm using at Mass is never going to be used for a scribbling book for little kids or something, right? I know that when it's done being used, I'm either going to bury it or respectfully burn it.
Right.
And so I know that it's a sacred object that's going to be used for a sacred purpose. All of a sudden, I've used an iPad to say Mass. And I've used a profane object for a sacred purpose. And the question then is, does that object become sacred? Because there's laws and things written in the church. If a chalice is used without it being blessed, the moment it's used, it becomes sacred. And so the moment I've used something for a sacred purpose, and I don't think we really have an answer for that because it's so weird and new, does that object become sacred? Do you have a blessed iPad?
I've heard stories, kind of an anecdote of back in the 70s when everything was, you know, weird, visiting priest celebrating mass in the rectory alone used a coffee cup as the chalice. And after he left, the sister came in, pulled the coffee cup out of the sink, smashed it with a hammer and respectfully buried it in the blessed ground. Because
I have smashed a number of clay cups and crystal cups and buried them in many churches. So,
our third headline is from the Free Press, and it's "We are all bad drivers." Richard, are we all bad drivers?
Respectfully, I am an excellent driver. I'm a very good driver, but I acknowledge that everyone else, you know, even though the majority of people think that they're above average drivers, they really aren't. No. So for that reason alone, I'm willing to hear Eric Newcomer out in this article. And actually, I agree with him for the large part.
So do you just have to say you're a good driver because of the line of work you're in, or?
No. And actually, I mean, I make mistakes like every driver does. And
all drivers are below average. Point that out. So the article by this Eric Newcomer basically is refuting this rising anger against self-driving cars. You're seeing more and more people rejecting self-driving cars. And as he points out, he apparently, coming from the progressive or liberal political viewpoint, he says a lot of this animus towards self-driving cars is coming from his fellow liberals, which he finds surprising. Because one of the things he points out is, even with self-driving cars having, have had traffic fatalities with self-driving cars as they're, getting better, there's still tens of thousands of traffic fatalities every year. Mm-hmm. So even if there are still some traffic fatalities and accidents from self-driving cars, that's still better than what we have now, is the argument he's making. I'm not sure I buy his argument completely, in the sense of you can't always make a policy or create a law or engineer a technology to fix every problem in society. We're never going to fix the problem of, and maybe this is kind of what he's saying, we're never going to completely fix the problem of accidents and people dying in accidents. We're never going to be able to take every car off the road. Some people want, like in Boston, they're trying to push to make it more difficult for people to drive in the city, because they feel if fewer people drive in the city, there'll be less accidents. And I'm like, that's how you kill a city. When people can't go there. I don't know. He makes some interesting arguments in the article, and I do kind of agree with the idea that we shouldn't just reject the technology. But is there a quantitative or qualitative difference between a traffic fatality involving a self-driving car versus a traffic fatality involving only humans? Is it different?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, it's a tragedy either way, no matter who's responsible. If I could snap my fingers overnight and suddenly every car was self-driving, that would cut accidents down to just about nothing, and everyone had access to it, could go where they wanted to go, whenever they wanted to go, but take humans out of the driving equation completely. I think that would be a net boon for humanity, because personally, I hate driving. I don't like it, but I still need to go places. And around here, people have just started to treat, red lights as optional, no matter how long they've been red. So as that becomes more and more prevalent, and every day in the news, some poor family or people have been wiped out by someone going the wrong way down the freeway or doing something stupid. I mean, granted, we're a long ways off from that kind of a future, but driving as a chore, I don't see as like some innate human right. As long as you have access to transportation when you need it and can go wherever you want to go, whenever you want to go there.
I have to confess, one of my guilty pleasures is watching dash cam videos online.
Oh no!
how is this going to end badly? It's pretty much, it's you're basically rubbernecking traffic accidents, but mainlining it like a drug. But the myriad of ways that people can do something stupid and end their day badly and hurt other people. I mean, that's really what you keep seeing in all these. It really drives it home to me, is this idea that, the weak link in all this is really the human behind the wheel. It's, we're distracted, we're tired. I mean, I can't tell you, it terrifies me to think how many people out there are driving to work every morning who were up all night with a sick kid, or who, mm-hmm. are hungover or distracted every day on the roads. This the people like this.
Yeah, I get a contact buzz just driving the streets around here because they've legalized marijuana, and now like you smell it like every time you drive anywhere, and you're like, goodness. People aren't getting smarter or more attentive on the road. It's the opposite,
So I recently had a purchased a new car. I put a lot of miles on my cars. 3,000 plus a month, lots of highway driving. And the car I got has the lane assist and the collision warning and assisted brake and all of that stuff. So the lane assist, I never noticed how much I hug the rumble strip. And it warns me and it vibrates my steering wheel. And sometimes if I go too far, it's going to jerk my wheel back a little bit. And that was something that I was hesitant of 5-6 years ago. The technology was questionable. I've been very happy with how it keeps me in the center of the lane. I don't use it to not put my hands on the steering wheel. It's an assistant, and it makes driving safer. The collision assist, right? If I'm approaching a car too fast, it's going to yell at me and beep. And if I get too close, it's going to slam on the brakes. Hopefully I slam on the brakes before it slams on the brakes, right? Those are things that are going to help in the long run, but it's not going to replace the human element. And so I could see looking at the self-driving cars, I still want a driver in the seat. And I think that's a lot of the legislation going around self-driving is that there still needs to be an operator.
Yeah, we're in a big transition. I mean, we're years away from true autonomous driving vehicles. We just saw Apple, you know, drop its multi-billion dollar research project into self-driving cars and that sort of stuff. I think a lot of these folks are starting to realize that it's going to be years before we're fully self-driving. But a lot of this assistive technology, that's really going to be great. Yeah. Victor, I know this might put you in a tough spot, so I won't push this on you. But Victor, you don't speak for your employer.
I sure don't speak for my employer, yeah, which is a large automotive manufacturing company. But that's been the focus lately, has been on driver assist technology, such as the lane keeping and even hands free driving under certain, road conditions and stuff. Which I find very exciting, although I'm still going to be one of those nervous Nellies who keeps my hand on the wheel at all times, no matter what. But that's more a function of my own like control freak tendencies and stuff.
Mine turns the technology off the moment if your hand's been off the wheel for more than I think 30 seconds or something, it will just turn it off, which I'm sitting looking at. I'm not one who does it, but what if someone's doing that and it turns it off? They're just going to go off into the...
I'm not driving. Are you driving? I'm not driving anymore.
It warns you before that happens.
So those are our headlines. And so now let's move on to our picks of the week. And Victor, you're up first. What's your pick this week?
Yeah. So kind of speaking of retro technologies, I hadn't bought a new Bluetooth speaker in a while because I really hadn't needed one, but I needed something for, an outdoor event that we're having. And also because I'd purchased a little portable projector, cause I thought it'd be fun to set up on the, on the deck and do movie nights with the kids and stuff. And I wanted a speaker that could act, reasonably powerful with good sound that would have a good stereo image. So, we could watch movies with it. And, looking around, you look at Bose, JBL, even Anchor Soundcore, start at around $150, $200. And that was more than I wanted to spend. So for under $100, brand I'm not familiar, W King, had this portable Bluetooth speaker, 100 watts, peak 70 watts. Who knows if you'll ever actually get up to that, but it's a waterproof outdoor speaker. It's about a foot and a half long, looks kind of like a torpedo, has woofers on the end, tweeters on the front. And the projector I got has Bluetooth, but I didn't know if that would work very well. So one of the requirements for me was that it had an auxiliary input jack, a 3.5mm audio jack. And it's really hard, getting really hard to find speakers that have that nowadays. But as it turns out, the Bluetooth from the projector to the speaker works great. We've tried setting it up indoors, watched a few movies on it. You get really good bass, really good music and dialogue through it. Just the one speaker, really good stereo sound. So happy with that purchase. And again, $92, it's a lot for a Bluetooth speaker, but it's not $200 or $300 on the other hand either. So,
one reason why you'd probably still want to use the auxiliary jack is the latency. You might have an issue where the mouse, the video doesn't match up with the sound.
Correct. Yeah. And the projector does have some compensation, some AV delay compensation, which corrects it for the most part. But if you're watching, we were watching mainly Studio Ghibli movies and stuff. And with the animation, it's less noticeable.
Right. It doesn't match up anyway.
Yeah. But definitely that was the other concern with getting the audio jack on it and stuff. And Of course, our 11-year-old is into retro technology, so he has tape players and CD players and stuff and wants to hook it all up and play his things in tapes that he's made of CDs on the Bluetooth speaker.
It's the inception. Father, what is your pick this week?
My pick this week goes perfectly along with our home networking theme, and it's a wireless network bridge. So let's say that you have your garage apart from your house, and you want internet in your garage, but you don't want to run a LAN cable all the way over to your garage. This is the solution to that. And so they're called point-to-point or point-to-multipoint. So what happens is you set one device that's transmitter on one side of the network, and then where you're trying to put internet, the other device goes and it beams the internet over to it. So this is the Ubiquiti NanoStation Loco M5, which is a 5 gigahertz and a 2.4 gigahertz, which I don't think we got into all of that, but one allows higher speed than the other. And so this just solves that solution of wanting to get internet to another building. So on the campus I'm on right now, my main office building has internet coming in. My residence is across the street, and my residence has internet from the main office building that I beam it with these devices. I've never got it to work above 100 megabytes a second. And so there's some speed loss sometimes when you do that, but it's better than having to pay several thousand dollars to have wire go underneath the street.
We'll have to ask Matt Clark, our resident farmer / technologist, if something like this would be helpful, if you had like an outbuilding, like a barn or something.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. I have done transmission to a full mile before. And so they're pretty, as long as you have a line of sight, you can do transmission. I think this particular one can get up to a mile, but you have to have clear line of sight. So maybe if you live in Kansas, you can get 50 miles. I don't know, but
I remember in the early days of Wi-Fi, the old Pringles cans, point to point extenders, you could rig up a Pringles can as a point to point antenna. This is one of the things about Ubiquiti is, like I was saying before, is they have just a variety of different devices for all sorts of special cases in their line. And so this is another one of those. And this is a really good one. If you need it, this is what you need. If you don't need it, you won't, you're not going to need this sort of thing. But if you need it, you need this. And that's so that's really great.
One of the biggest uses that I use for them is security cameras, especially in different areas of parking lots and stuff, that you can use the extenders to be able to piece that security camera into your network without running wires. And so that can help you out a lot with things such as that.
Mm. Now, speaking of driving, one thing that I do a lot is I drive a lot of places, whether in our Honda or in our big Ford Transit van. And I usually have several people with me, my wife, kids, and we'll have devices, we'll have a phone, various things. And everybody needs to be plugged in and charging. And so this is a three socket. It's the Super One. One of those, generic brand names. Three socket cigarette lighter splitter. So it has three cigarette lighter sockets that it has one that goes into the 12-volt socket that you. I know, cigarette lighter. It shows how old I am. And it goes into the 12-volt socket on your dash. And that has an out for another 12-volt socket, powering device. And then there's a piece that's attached via a wire that goes into a cup holder. So you're going to sacrifice a cup holder for this. And that has two more cigarette lighter adapter sockets to plug things in, as well as two USB ports, one of them being a quick charge, three amp quick charge. I think it's 3 amp quick charge slot. And it even will tell you it has a readout for what the current amperage is flowing through it, which is handy if you want to make sure you're actually getting power through it. I actually, one of the things that they said you can do with this is that you can plug like a car refrigerator into it or a, you know, an electric cooler. I tried that and it burnt it out, so I didn't have to replace it. I mean, it was only $20. So maybe it was just the electric cooler I have or something. Or maybe the one I had was, there was something wrong with it. But I probably should have tried replacing a fuse now that I think about it. Now that I'm looking at the product description.
It looks like it comes with a couple.
I think I wasted $20. Anyway, but it's this is not a waste of $20 if you buy it and use it correctly. Yeah, I recommend it. It's really nice. And you can, like, so one of the things I do with this is I've got, you know, this, but then I have an additional cigarette lighter adapter charging thing that has four USB ports and I on a long cord that I extend into the back seat that people can plug in back there as well. So that way, you know, everyone's getting plugged into their things and you know, they're charging off of everything. And I don't hear all the complaints. Yeah, it's one of those things. If you know you need it, you know you need it.
My new car, there's no cigarette utility port in the front. There's one in the back seat and in the trunk, but there's not one by the driver anymore.
That's weird.
It's scary. I think those ports might be going the way of the CD player.
How you got to charge things in your car? That's weird.
Sometimes it's on the right side, the passenger side of the center console, like where it kind of molds into the dash. So you can kind of poke around there.
Yeah, it's not.
Okay. I was wondering if you could actually plug the old like Lincoln cigar lighters into it, you know, and use it for its intended purposes. Those things were great for like tormenting your sister on a.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like get them red hot and then you. But
how many of you actually touched your finger to a red hot one?
All the time. Yeah, you get the cool little circles on there for a couple of weeks. Yes. Yeah, I think I got a couple of those sitting around someplace from the old cars. I'll have to see if they work.
That and the ashtray in the back of the seat.
Yeah, cigar for the cigars, of course.
Oh, man. All right. So those are our picks of the week, and that'll do it for us this time. We'd love to hear from you. Anything you think about our discussion, any questions you may have, any feedback you want to give us, you can comment on the show at sqpn.com/technology. Or the StarQuest Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to technology@sqpn.com. Visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. And you can find links from our discussion and our picks of the week on our show notes at starquest.fm/TEC250. Be sure to write a review in Apple Podcasts or one of the podcast directories or anywhere that you can write reviews of podcasts. We haven't had a review of this show in a long time. And share the podcast with your friends. That helps us grow our community and reach more listeners. Until next time, Father Joseph Sun, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of technology.
My pleasure.
Victor Lambs, thank you as well.
Thanks, Dom.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Technology on StarQuest.